Oh, hello from quarantine. The podcast starts now.
I was just thinking about a cool graphic we could have, but you can't translate that through audio.
No, it's an audio format. Are you saying you want to change the logo? Because we got like 12 of those.
No, please. We could? I don't know. Could we have like a more summer color logo?
I'll take a look at what's in there. I could mix it up.
I don't know. Heather gave us like 20.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
She was like, here, enjoy.
I didn't want to overutilize them. I was gonna use the Rising Sun one for Golden Week.
I know. I was going to use that. If it was honestly just a choice of mine, I would just have it forever, but I can't do that.
It's a fun one. You got to use it for the appropriate topics.
Yeah, you got to be sparing with that. But hello, Rich. How are you?
I'm good, Eric. I'm here playing some video games. One of the video games I've been playing the most this week is actually an old video game.
Which one?
Was it 6? All the talk of Assassin's Creed Valhalla made me realize I really liked Odyssey, but I didn't play that much of it, there's so much game there. So I started a new file in that, and it really is, like, I used to make the joke when people would be like, did you play AC Odyssey? And I'd be like, yes, I played The Witcher 4, and it really is that. It's a Witcher game.
Oh, it only helped you double down on that assumption, or assertion, I should say?
It helped me double down on they took, like, so much of The Witcher and made it into this Assassin's Creed RPG, and that has me even more excited for Valhalla, because I'm like, this formula is so different than what it was, and it's so good now.
Oh, I like that. It's so funny you mention that, because you know how, like, I don't know, when somebody gets into a game from past, like Bloodborne, for example, remember like a few months ago, all of a sudden it seemed like everybody was talking about Bloodborne.
And I think you and I both started playing it again, too.
Yeah, well, that's what I was kind of referencing. So when I go online, say, to like certain social media areas, and I see that a lot of other people in the media industry or otherwise go, hey, oh, you know what I really felt like going back to is Bloodborne.
Yeah.
And then a colleague will say, oh, you know what I was really going back to is Bloodborne. And all of a sudden, everyone's just talking about Bloodborne. And it seems like the most rehearsed, fakest shit I've ever seen, where everyone's just like, oh, you know, I'm rediscovering Bloodborne. It's like, no, you weren't. It's just, but what's the impetus? So, in the past, I was just thinking, all right, well, Bloodborne's good. And then I started getting back into Bloodborne, and then I identified. But then, when Valhalla came out with the trailer, I started investigating and asking about the different Assassin's Creeds too, because it gets me thinking, you know, I want to jump back into it. So totally. I started asking around for other colleagues and other people, and I was like, hey, you know, you ever play Black Flag or Origins or Odyssey? Because I barely have ever played those.
The thing to me, if you want to get a feel for what Valhalla is going to be, Origins is absolutely when it changed into this, like, Assassin's Creed reinvented itself. Origins is great. I played that one up and down. I decided to go back to Odyssey because as much as I enjoyed it, I probably only put like 8 hours into it at the time, and it's a huge game.
Yeah, that was actually one of my deterrents from starting that immediately, because I know that the general consensus from people I've asked, including yourself, they always say that first and foremost. You know, they say it's beautiful, but it's also long, and it's not a bad thing. It's just
you
gotta dedicate the time, and it's very, very, very much so a deterrent when I'm thinking, gee, how much time do I have to dedicate to this game?
Even Ubisoft said they're addressing some of the bloat issues with Odyssey, and Valhalla is not going to be quite that overwhelming.
Well, Odyssey also had the the EXP walls, for lack of a better phrase or term.
Yeah, a lot of that got nerfed, and I can already tell it's better now. Like, I put maybe 8 hours into it over the last week, and I'm already at, like, level 30. Because there is a leveling system. And I know, I think the end game content's, like, level 50. And I do want to get to some of the expansion stuff because I have all of it.
Yeah, and for those who don't even know what I'm talking about, in Odyssey, they go full RPG in this one, apparently. And from what I've seen,
with Origins, they started that.
Oh, well, this one, they apparently doubled down then. And then there are certain ways that you could grind for XP. But there are certain aspects of the game, especially when you get to the DLC, that are just so hard.
Well, I don't know.
You can buy your levels, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you ever remember this story happening at the time. It was eventually, they made changes so you could not do this. But at one point, they created a quest designer. So you can build your own quests in the game and post them online and people can download them. When this first launched, there were really no limitations to it. So people were making quests that were like, go talk to this guy. and that's the quest, and it would yield like 2 million XP.
Yeah, and they quickly put an end to that because it ended their money-making schemes.
Yeah.
But I guess over time, since the game's so dirt cheap now, I mean, it's like, what, $25?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but I still won't support that.
If you want,
I didn't want to go back to that. I did want to go back to Black Flag, though, first, just because I was curious. I like
that's
pirates.
A great game.
I want to go play Pirates, and I'm just really choosing my era, so that's cool. And I think we talked about that last week, too, but doubling down.
We did. If you want me to give you the big selling point on Origins, which is also a great game, you mm-hmm. can get a Chocobo in that game.
A Chocobo?
Yeah, they did a crossover with
FF15
at one point, mm-hmm. and completing that quest yields Bayek a Chocobo mount and Noctis' sword.
Wow. That's actually pretty cool. I was going to go blade. From Black Flag to Origins and then maybe touch Odyssey. It's just so long from what I've seen and heard. I'm talking people have gone over 100 hours here and they're like, yeah, you know, and that's just with everything.
Yeah.
And maybe that's actually not even covering everything.
For me, I mean, I'm okay with jumping to it because it's kind of filling in the gaps for some other stuff with me. And also, it is pretty much the only one that I never saw through to the end.
I was going to say, are you starting fresh or are you just picking up where you left off?
I started fresh. Those files are long gone. But I already have put a decent amount of time into it. And with it being such a big RPG, it's become one of those things where I play it like I play an MMO. Like, I'll just mindlessly do quests and, like, watch Netflix, and then when I'm doing story stuff, I just pause whatever I'm watching on Netflix.
Very, 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 very swanky setup there.
That's just basically...
Just constant stimulation.
I mean...
Netflix or game.
You know me, like, that's how I used to play FF14. Like, I would just quest to grind and watch fucking Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely turn my brain off when doing dailies and MMOs or something similar, so I get the aspect of doing that. I've been just playing last weekend. I really didn't do too much, but I was playing more FF7, a little bit of Gears, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat with that. I played more hard mode on FF7, and I've the Gears Tactics thing specifically. I think we talked about it a decent amount, and I think we were both really digging it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing neither of us was up to at the time that I do want to bring up is we both played it early enough that we were given Thrash Ball Cull. Can we talk
about
how much work they didn't do to give you Thrash Ball Cull?
They literally... I didn't understand how little they just really just picked him out and just went, here you go. But they actually did.
Here's another hero unit, and it says when you start, he'll appear in Chapter 4. So initially I went, oh, cool, they worked him into the story. But it's like, no, he's just here now.
Yeah, no, I actually thought the same. I thought we'd at least get a little dialogue snippet, even something stupid, because, you know, I've gotten some DLC before that's just absolutely dumb.
Like you're fighting a Brumach.
Someone literally just says, hello, I'm here, out of the bushes, and that's fine.
Can't stop the train, baby. That.
Yeah, they didn't give us that, and I thought that was hilarious. I was thinking, well, okay, well, now we got Thrash Ball Cull.
And then I texted you about this. Him being dressed like a goddamn linebacker is so jarring, but you can't change it because the stats on his gear is really good.
Yeah, I can't help but just feel like they did it on purpose. Just say, nah, you're going to keep this on, and you're not going to change it.
And it's kind of hilarious when, like, a dramatic moment is happening, and, like, Gabe and the others get off the APC, and, like, there's just a football linebacker standing behind them with an assault rifle.
Yeah, and it's only funny, it's especially funny in this kind of game, because you know what, in Gears, just the general game lines, they had Thrash Ball Cull as a skin, too. But that was
yeah.
fun. You know, they had other skins.
And that was really for multiplayer and Horde.
Yeah, it was a multiplayer thing, so that was fun. But this one, he's just fully integrated in story. And you're just thinking, what the hell?
Why is he... Yeah, like,
just thinking, why is he here? And why Chapter 4? If anything, I would imagine you would beat the game first, and then they would say, hey, yeah, after Thrash Ball Cull, because at this point, who gives a fuck, right? And now it's just, nah, you can have the linebacker.
I think Chapter 4 is when you start being able to freely recruit units.
Uh-huh.
But Cull is also considered a hero unit, so he's one of the ones you can't let die.
Yeah, no, he is a general core part of your team, so that's why it's just odd.
He has the same exact skill tree as, God, I can't remember his name. The second character you get who...
Cid?
Yeah, he has the same skill tree as Cid. He uses a Retrolancer.
Well, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to complain about... A Thrash Ball Cull. I just thought that was... I did think that was jarring, because you know what? After you texted me about it, I looked it up and I just went, huh. I guess he just is.
So talking about that more, I don't know how far you got.
Not too far.
I'm in the beginning of Act 2, or is it Chapter? You know how Gears games are split up. It's like Act 1, Chapter. Yep, they always do Act 1, Chapter. Yeah, so I'm at the beginning of Act 2. I don't know if you beat Act 1 yet.
Have not.
So I can talk a little bit about the first boss of Act 1 is a Brumach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way they made that work for a tactical game is really smart. Basically, the Brumach's brain, like his AI, is pretty simplistic. He is facing a certain direction, and he is going to attack in that direction. He's going to move towards the units in that direction, try and stomp them, try and fire his chain guns at them.
Mm-hmm.
His weak point is the emulsion tanks on his back.
Mm-hmm.
If you fire at the emulsion tanks, he turns around to try and block them. So, Basically, the simple strategy is you want to kind of juke him back and forth. So you want to split your squad into two parties. You fire on his tanks, he's going to turn, so now the squad on the other side can freely fire on his tanks, and you keep juking him back and forth so he never gets too close to a squad, and you can keep kind of forcing him to change who he's targeting.
Right. Oh, it's, so that's just the well.
That's really kind of it.
Say, but this time the Brumach knows about this and he just wrecks
you.
No,
that's. I think it works pretty well. Like, because I was like, how are monsters that are this gigantic going to work well in a tactics game? But I think they found a sweet spot. I mean, he has other attacks. Every turn he fires off a series of missiles that hit, like, they sort of put a reticle on the ground and hit the next turn. So you got to make sure your units don't end their turn in that radius. He's got the chain guns, which you can destroy by firing on them. But I thought it was interesting. I thought they did a pretty good job. And with the Brumach, the fucking gigantic Brumach being the first boss, I think we got like another five acts. So I'm wondering what the other four bosses could be.
Yeah, I'm sure they're still going to be big boys. I mean, the whole premise of that game is that they're making abominations out of the locusts. So I'm sure there's just going
to
be more.
I mean, I'm sure we got the Corpser. We got stuff like that. There's other locust monsters to mine.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure there's going to be more commander units. Come out, more of a horde mode kind of attrition-based gameplay.
I don't know if you faced any boomers or anything like that.
No, not yet.
Because that was another thing.
Yes, I have. That's not true.
I was wondering how they were going to handle that. Like, enemies like boomers and Theron guards, when you take them down, you can pick up their weapons, which is cool.
Which is, yeah. I'm always glad about that because that's, I mean, pretty much the heart and soul of Gears.
Like, if I can't use a Tark bow, what are we doing here?
Yeah, no, really. And I think that's why I was talking about it the other day to my brother. The way that they just made it, I wish Gears just, from now on, just had their own little tactics line. Alongside the main games. Cause
I think it might.
They're
I think
able to expand
there's reason
it.
For it.
They're able to expand it, I think, in terms of story pretty damn well. And I think the potential they could have for it would be awesome.
And there's other stories to tell. Like, this is exactly. Before Gears 1, I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It just has the potential to have the main Gears line of games, because those, I know with Gears 5 that was released, everybody loved that. And there'll definitely be a sequel to that. Have the mainline games over there with the main game, but you could always just have your tactics line, kind of an extended universe-based kind of game line, and just play the story out like that. I think that's really cool. And I think it would be a smart play to just keep going for that.
Yeah, I think we said this last time, but it's just amazing to me how they basically managed to take the XCOM formula and then retain the things that make Gears Gears.
Yeah, and they even just tweaked it just a little bit to not make it so... I don't want to say it's not strategic, because that's obviously a blatant lie, but XCOM to me has a certain degree of care to it where you kind of have to go a little bit further in terms of strategizing, whereas with Gears, it's hard, it's fast, and also it's just brutal in terms of just saying, listen, you just got to be powerful and make smart decisions here, but, you know, at the end of the day, you don't need to nitpick every single little thing.
There are, well, because you still have revivals that you can have, and there are times when it does feel like you can brute force it, but then with the recruit units, the non-hero units, the non-Gabe, Sids, and Coles, and I got the fourth character, the sniper, but I'm sorry, I can't remember her name. Something with an L, I want to say. At times, you need to preserve them, but you can make sacrifice plays on certain units. You might not want to, because you put work into them, you've given them gear. I think even those RPG mechanics, like the gear and stuff, blends really well. Like having these like wrapped barrel on your sniper and stuff, like... There's enough there to be like, wow, they really put some thought into this.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think, from the last time I remember of XCOM, because I haven't played it for years, I don't think you have a hero, quote-unquote. You just have your squad that you keep recruiting endlessly, and then they get promoted through just survival of missions.
Chimera Squad, which I talked about
that's
2 weeks
ago,
is the
difference
there.
Besides that one, because that's literally like, hey, we have a team that's dedicated to this, and it's something that's story-based, and you have a hero squad. But in base XCOM, it's just, you just keep recruiting.
Yeah, and you have that memorial in your base.
Yeah, and whoever makes it, and whoever doesn't, well, you recruit another one, start them off as a private, and go on your way. But this one, it's more story-based, so it kind of makes sense that there's just heroes to it. Which I like. I dig it.
My joke in XCOM would always be, my starting squad, I would just, like, name after my friends, and then, like, Eric, when you died, I'd text you and let you know that I lost you in the line of duty.
I mean, anybody who doesn't do that, come on. It's kind of fun. You name a squad after your friends, and you're like, oh, Rich died. You just go, take a deep sigh and just recruit somebody else and just go, well, Rich, too.
I should call him. No,
should call Rich.
I should just let you all discover it one day. Like, you're at my house, like, fucking around with XCOM, and you're like, Rich, why is my name on your memorial?
And just go, hey. You call me late at night, and I go, hey. You're like, just thinking about you. Just want to let you know that, you know, I do appreciate you.
And I'll avenge you.
And I'll avenge you, because I sent you out last mission to die.
And you got strangled by a snake man.
And I had a nightmare about it, and I just wanted to know if you were okay. I didn't know if it was real.
Then when I hang up the phone,
yes, I am okay.
The snake man hisses on your ceiling.
I am a snake man. No, and I do appreciate those kinds of games just for that, because, you know, and having heroes in the squad too, which is why Thrashable Cole's so weird. That's why he's so weird.
It's so jarring.
I actually would have preferred it if he was just a premium style unit or grunt on your team that could die, but it's okay.
Well, that's just it.
It's cold.
Like,
it's cold trained.
At some point in the story, I'm sure I will be able to get gear that is better than his Thrashball gear, and I'll be able to just have Cole, and it'll feel normal again.
You think they'll have a DLC for this?
I think so.
I was thinking that they'll probably just make a Gears Tactics 2, if anything else.
Well, they definitely will do that, but also, my main thought is, like, this thing's reviewing incredibly well. It's like 8s and 9s across the board.
I think when it officially moves to consoles eventually, that's when it'll kind of pick up steam again and get more incentivize the publishers to start making more for it. Maybe.
And you and I are both playing it on PC Game Pass. I think one of the main conceits of Game Pass and the sacrifice play Microsoft is willing to make is their thought is, we're giving a lot of people this base game for free, but if they really like it, they'll buy the DLC.
Oh, for sure. And think of just when we're talking about just general buzz for the game too, there are people in troves on the console side who are waiting to play this, and they can't yet. So by the time that this does get released over there eventually, and for sure it will, that's even a double win, because they're generating so much buzz now that they're probably just gonna have a second wave of income just coming to incentivize, oh hey, you know, maybe we should make more, maybe we should make more DLC characters or another mode or just something like that. So
yeah,
I'm just, in general, I'm looking forward to it. I always love when companies or devs take another story, kind of twist it around a bit, change up the gameplay, make it something new. This isn't something, they're not reinventing a wheel here. It's just they're taking a concept that really so much fits the Gears universe, and I'm really glad they did it. It was like when Halo went to Halo Wars. And that's why I'm actually pretty bummed that Halo Wars 2 kind of did not live up to its
predecessor. I don't think I ever played Halo Wars 2.
It was not good. I played it and I returned it. It was not good. I don't want to say it wasn't good outright. There was just a lot of things that were missing from 1, and also just things that they could have improved upon on 1, but they just didn't. It was very
Don't forget,
odd.
Halo started development as an RTS.
Yeah, very true. And that's why it was also just weird. It was just a weird development story. And frankly, it's kind of a bummer that it's gone. Even though you can get it on Steam, the older ones, but
yeah.
I was the other day too, I was also watching Lord of the Rings, and I was just thinking, man, I miss Battle for Middle-earth, and I am so thirsty to
have
more of that.
People were way into that RTS.
Because it was good. It was good. I only played two RTSs at the time. I did not play StarCraft, but I did play Age of Empires, and I played Battle for Middle-earth, and those were the... And Red Alert. But those were the coolest.
Everybody played Red Alert, baby.
Yeah. Red Alert was fantastic, but those were the coolest games. Red Alert ended up stopping eventually. Battle for Middle-earth just stopped after 2, which was a very big bummer. I was so bummed.
What was the Star Wars one?
Just persisted.
I played the Star Wars one that I can't remember.
That was Empire at War?
Yes, I played Empire at War.
That's literally, I think it was on sale recently too. But
it's on sale all the time.
Literally just Age of Empires 2 for Star Wars. Great game. It's $20 now, but it's always on sale. But that's, it's a fantastic game, and also just... downright perfect that you're clamoring for a re-release of, and you just know eventually it may not come, or a remastered edition may, but chances are it's not gonna.
It's one of those things where, like, licensed RTS is like that. Like, what's, like, WB probably has the full Lord of the Rings license as far as video games go, I want to assume.
Well, apparently, well, with Empire of War 2...
Who's putting out that Gollum game?
Is that they also have a lot of mods from the community, which is what's saving it, if anything else. So, frankly, as long as they just keep pumping out the mods that are so excellent for that game, then whatever. But, I know, just give me another Battle for Middle-earth, please. I'm begging for it.
Maybe one day.
But as long as I have Gears Tactics, I'm okay with that.
We'll get by.
We can make an RTS of Gears, too. I can totally see it.
Yeah,
if
I mean,
they ever wanted to.
Tactics
it,
was but... the obvious one, just because it's a cover shooter. Like, it just works in Tactics.
Oh, for sure. And XCOM's popular. Can't deny that.
Hell yeah,
you had the Rabbit Kingdom one. Or what was it? Raging Rabbit? Mario Kingdom?
Oh, Mario Rabbit's Kingdom Battle.
Yeah, there
you know what I'm waiting for? I own all the classic XCOM games on PC as well. I almost wish that XCOM 2, like, you know, modern XCOM 2, had taken the completely silly route that XCOM did. Do you know what the name of the original XCOM 2 is?
No.
I think it's like XCOM 2 Underwater Invaders. Let me double check this.
XCOM 2 X Gon' Give It To You. Remastered edition.
Hold on. Wow. Real searching in real time.
I mean, hey, I'm at the edge of my seat waiting for it. Don't disappoint. You gotta find it.
I know I have it. I mean, if it's not... It is... Let's see. Here's all my XCOM games. Yes, XCOM... The original XCOM is called XCOM UFO Defense, and then the sequel is called XCOM Terror from the Deep. In XCOM... The original XCOM 2, you're no longer fighting aliens. You're fighting, like, mermen.
I can only imagine the subtitle or the tagline for it, where it says, this time, the terror's not coming from above, but below.
So, if we go in order of release, here's all the XCOM games. XCOM UFO Defense, XCOM Terror from the Deep, XCOM Apocalypse, XCOM Interceptor, XCOM Enforcer, and then we start the soft reboot with XCOM Enemy Unknown.
I have to say, going from Apocalypse to Interceptor and then Enforcer really, really just deflates the stakes.
Yeah, doesn't it a little bit?
You probably realized after that, where can you go?
Classic XCOM is actually really fun, though, and they're pretty cheap on Steam. Like, if anyone's
they're hard, though, right?
They're really hard, but
yeah,
they're...
I was going to say, one thing I always know about XCOM, even though I never played them, is that they have very unforgiving difficulties.
They absolutely do, but they're really fun games, like a novel look, and I always loved XCOM Enemy from the Deep, because it felt like this whole... Like, now XCOM feels so connected, but it was just like, you're this government agency fighting threats wherever they may be. So the first one was UFO defense, and then the second one was mermen are attacking.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's just ridiculousness to it, where they say, wow, where can we go from aliens? And some guy just goes into the writer's room and says, hear me out, mermen.
I like to think he goes, we went to space, where do we go now? And then he shoved his head into a basin he filled with water.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, a fishbowl or something. And everyone's just like, what is he doing?
Everyone
what
just stood up and applauded.
This one guy just goes, what is this? What's happening? No, I would adore that. Yeah, no, but it's just as true. And even more so, I'm wondering where XCOM's going to go from 2, which is why I actually really liked how they had Chimera Squad. Because it's just a little... variation as to how creative they can be with their baseline of games.
Totally.
Because after 2, for sure, I was thinking, well, what are they gonna
what's
do
next?
It's like, yeah,
let's go back to Underwater.
Oh, I would... Can you imagine they just have Terror from the Deep 2?
Yeah,
XCOM 3, Terror from the Deep 2. I would love it.
Terror from the over here.
Terror from, you
from
know.
Terror from well, the know. From the desert. It's just
from
all,
the shadows.
It's all snake men.
Just say go to the desert. You just hear slithering all over the place. Yeah, but Gears Tactics still really, really fun. I still like it. Really surprised that it didn't come out on console at the time. But hey, the buzz is eternal.
I mean, for me, I'm console versions of tactics games are fine. But they feel, like, so slow to me as someone who normally plays those games on PC. Like,
oh, for sure.
The precision of mouse and keyboard just makes those games faster. And encounters in games like that already take a long time.
And you gotta give it credit. I mean, this is just more goodwill towards Microsoft's commitment to saying, hey, listen, you know, we're gonna make games for PC.
Oh, and also before I mention this, I might be foolish and haven't looked, and it might already be in there. I think a multiplayer in this game could work really well. Specifically, I don't know how many of the side missions you've run.
Nope.
Basically, eventually in between chapters, you'll be able to get side missions. And they have, like, straight-up game mode names to them. Like, one of them is a control point mode.
Where, oh, just like the base games?
Yeah, you're trying to hold control points, and enemy units keep spawning and trying to take them. Like, that could be a multiplayer mode.
I guess that'd be cool if you just wanted somebody to, like, know, co-op with you on your decisions. I'm not the type of person that would...
Well, even if one person's the invading locust who has, like, amount of money to spend
each round... Oh,
you're
talking about, like, a 1v1 kind of deal?
Yeah, like...
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
One person's holding a point, the other person's trying to take the point, and they... think of it this way, like, while the Gears units are like, okay, I have X amount of units, the Locust team has... They get, like, a currency every turn and can spend it on producing units, and the COG just have to hold the point for a certain amount of turns.
Oh, yeah. That could work. My brain at the time only conceived that as just being a co-op experience, and I was thinking, you know, if somebody was ever touching my XCOM or any of these types of games, I would slap their hands away and say, no.
Well, Wargroove does that absolutely. Co-op stuff pretty well, to my understanding.
I mean, if it works, it works. I'd be a fan of that. That'd be pretty damn cool. It's just I'm thinking about how all the ways of how cool an RTS would have been of that, and now I just want an RTS where... That it's just akin to, say, Battle for Middle Earth or something like that.
Well, good news. It's cutting. I don't know.
Well, good news hot off the press. I'm glad you said it. I do work for Microsoft, and I can confirm
my uncle.
New Gears Tactics. But other than that, though, yeah, I mean, I was playing more FF7. What am I, like 10 hours in now? I'm just chugging. I'm taking my time with this because...
You really are, but hey, I commend you.
Well, I'm doing it on purpose because I'm having a blast with it now. I just know that there's going to be no more game after this. So it's almost like you have a pallet of chocolate, and you're just kind of chipping away at this thing, and you just know by the time you're done, there's no more chocolate. So,
well, that's what I'm doing with hard mode. I'm really, like, I'm doing, like...
I'm trying to save it.
A chapter or two every couple of days.
Yeah, I'm trying to ration off my goodness of it, because I'm really digging it now. I mean, I finished Macro Reactor 5, fought big hovercrafty... Mechie boy.
Oh, I
got
love,
the Chocobo Moogle summon. I'm riding on Cloud 9 right now, and I have to say, the best part of this entire game is the boss fights, by far. It's almost as if they just said, you know, screw everything. Boss fights are where they are, because they are so cinematic, they're so engaging, and they're just so damn enjoyable, and it's pure eye candy throughout the entire thing. Halfway through fighting, sometimes, I just like to watch.
Yeah.
And just appreciate what is unfolding before my eyes. Like, I summoned, what is it? Is it Ifrit or Ifrit? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I usually say Ifrit.
Yeah. I summoned Ifrit for the first time, because I usually was just summoning Cactuar, because, you know, he's my day one. And it was so beautiful. It was just so damn cool. And I felt like I was watching a movie.
Think about, like...
Because he's just so cinematic, and they were so cool, and then the Moogle and the Chocobo combo came out, also just cinematic and just so cool.
Well,
it was
that's
so
what's,
high def.
What's crazy is that's what FF7 was known for at the time, too. Like, think about, like, going into future installments. Can you imagine what Knights of the Round is going to look like?
I can't. I genuinely can't. And that's why I'm thinking, wow, you know, when people were originally playing 7, they probably had their minds fucking blown at this, because, you know, the first 3D kind of RPG that's coming out to them at this scale, they're just thinking, whoa. And... The only downfall is that this isn't turn-based, so I really am on a timer here. You know, it's all happening in real time. I can't just gawk at the graphics because I've died a few times just by looking at some of it. It's just cool. All of it's just cool, and then you get through to the dialogue, and you just kind of see how things unfold. Right now, I crashed with the church, and I officially met Aerith again for the second time. She is just very pushy. She's very
that pushy. That Reno fight's pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
I like that fight.
He's awesome. The whole electricity thing, and he has, like, a little lightning stuff going on. It's just really cool. And I like how the soldiers just, you know, they're well-known, and they're all just wacky people. Like, even Reno is like, Cloud, you're weird. Like, they just know when people are weird.
I'm sitting in the rafters shaking my electric baton, but you're weird.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this guy's saying it.
I'm
but
interested
I'm
when,
a good
you,
time with it.
When you get to it to see what you think, because over at Sword Chomp, we recorded the spoiler cast for FF7 this past weekend. And we all kind of agreed the Cloud versus Rufus fight is, like, the combat at its peak.
I'm kind of anticipating it so heavily because I had to end it. I was literally almost getting to it last night. I know it's coming. Like, you almost know it's coming.
Well, it gets to be, like, the...
And I'm almost there.
The thing is, I think the Reno fight showcases this well, and then the Rufus fight, like, shows you that at its peak. This combat is great, but it's tuned really finely in one-on-one fights. And the Rufus fight... it in the way Reno kind of trained you to have to be able to do those like stance change counters and all that. Cloud versus Rufus is like this culmination of everything you know in a one-on-one fight, and if you can't do those stance changes and stuff, if you haven't got it down, it's a hard fight. But everything coming together, and it just feels so good.
I'm so happy to hear that. They pretty much give you the signs too, because when you're fighting Reno, he's basically just kind of giving you a primer for it. You could feel it, and then at the end, he's just like, "Ah, my partner will get it. Fuck it." And then you see him, you see Rufus, and you're just thinking, "Oh,
yep, that's the one."
Like you just know.
I think I told you, with our friend Tom told me that he didn't counter at all in the fight with Reno, and I was like, "What?
You how?" We talked about this too, yeah. And he just kept dying. He was thinking, "This game's so hard."
It's like, how is this happening? Like, no, you gotta count. Oh, I didn't tell you about this either, since you have now seen Rude at this point at least, right? Good old Baldy Rude.
Yes.
When it comes time for you to fight Rude, and I went back to this chapter to see how true it holds. If you remember this in the original, I don't think a lot of people knew this, but Rude is considered somewhat of a ladies' man. So if you have Tifa in your party in the original FF7, he won't attack her until she's the last one standing. And in this one, he actually attacks Tifa a lot less when she's in your party. Like, it won't be the same way of he won't attack her until everyone else is down, but he attacks her a lot less than he attacks the other characters.
I can't wait. I'm thinking of Rufus now. Cool high-def white coat.
Don Jr.?
Being all cool. Yeah, exactly, Don Jr. Probably HD hair follicles going on. Something
oh, man, cool. You know what they finally proved to me? Because I always wondered if he was just wearing a poorly edited pantsuit at the time.
Oh, I was thinking a poorly tailored suit. I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, in the art, it doesn't give him any credit from his original.
I mean, he's got that full-on flowy look to it.
Yeah, I love their whole division, the Turk division of these guys. They're so cool. But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. But I'm just playing with Aerith right now, just walking around, being a bodyguard. And I went to her house, saw her mom, I was like, sup, what's going on? Her place is also gorgeous as shit. There's just certain aspects of this game that are so mysterious to me because, again, there are some textures in this game that are absolute ass.
Yeah.
And some of them, like Aerith's house, are absolutely gorgeous. And
the places they knew. Yeah.
Yeah, you can just tell where all the time is spent. Some of the dialogue, like the character rigs that are going through dialogue with you sometimes, it's so jarring to watch their mouth move. And I think it's so funny because I don't understand how you, I mean, again, I don't know how sometimes I know how the sausage is made, others I don't. I don't know how much work had to go into rigging them with the mouth movements.
It's resource allocation.
They are so weird. It is so weird sometimes. And I'm just thinking, why didn't you guys just like...
And then
just
you can see...
Mouth. Why don't you just move the jaw up a little bit more? Like, just move it up a little bit.
Well, it's, again, even, like, they spent more work on certain NPCs because you knew you'd see them more. Like, Johnny and, like, Leslie and Don Corneo. Like, these are characters that pop up multiple times, so they spent more time on them.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I get that. And I'm okay with all that. For the most part, I just think it's funny. Sometimes it's just jarring where you're thinking, oh, well... I didn't give a shit about this part, you know?
Shout out.
For all the time that they've spent on the game itself, I don't know, it just gave me the impression that it was going to be and no, I'm not shitting on it. I'm just saying, you would think it had such meticulousness to it that you're just like, hey, every aspect of this game is going to be so fucking crazy, and you just have somebody being like, from Assassin's Creed, not Origins, what was the ones that always had, like, the wacky glitches in them with the people and the two eyeballs and mouths? Was it, like, Revelations or...
I think it was Revelations. Revelations.
There's a few of them.
Yeah.
There's a few of the Ezio ones, but,
Brotherhood and Revelations, like,
sometimes
I think.
It's just funny to look at. But Aerith right now is just taking me around. I gotta say, very pushy. Very, very pushy character.
She's a lady who knows what she wants.
Yeah. Don't. Well, what if Cloud knows what he wants, too? And
He clearly doesn't. Have you seen Cloud?
He's literally like, hey, I'm gonna go back... the slums, you know, like I said. And by the way, what's the payment? Because you said you'd pay me. And she's like, oh, I'm the payment. I was like, what the hell is this? Like, what is this? Like, you can't do that.
I don't feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, he just goes, takes a deep breath, and just goes, I'm out of here. Like, I'm leaving. She just goes, oh, no. Like, you're going to sleep over, too.
How
like,
glad are you that you can finally... You can finally go down that Moogle slide.
Oh, ecstatic. Finally. After all these years. Finally.
I waited 23 years for this.
I was walking by it. I have to tell you, I was walking by because I didn't know you could. And I went, maybe. And then I saw the little prompt for it, and I went, oh. Very nice.
Yeah, but it's quality stuff.
Good time. It's a good game. It's just a good game. I read recently, what was it, a report or an article that Square Enix was kind of talking through certain conceptual designs still for the second part.
Yeah.
It looks like the general audience or a couple of consumer audiences were thinking, oh, you know, the game's barely even done. But I more so think of it as they have parts of it obviously fleshed out. It's just, I imagine that bigger things such as the overworld, they're just thinking, how the fuck are we going to do this?
Also, come to think of, and I think we talked about this in the past, but I think it's going to be a lot like FF15, where it's going to be smaller overworlds, like we talked about last time, I think, the area with Calm, the Chocobo Farm, and the Marshes is going to be like the first real open world area.
Yeah.
Like the area just outside of Midgar.
I'm kind of torn because at the same time I'm thinking, you know, you don't, with a game like this, I really don't think you'll need an overworld. Even though, I mean, I know there's an overworld, but I mean, you don't really need the overworld.
Here's also
the waypoints and just move, you know?
Here's also the thing. Yeah, I think that's fine in introducing a fast travel at a certain point, like with the Chocobo carriages in Midgar. An open world, yeah, it isn't necessary because also people go, you know, the freedom of FF7. RPGs of that era did not have real freedom. They tricked your brain into thinking they did.
Yeah, and it's also, you don't know what you want until you get it. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those deals, and I gotta be honest, when we're talking about, say, the amount of freedom that you have, say Assassin's Creed Origins, for example, because I've been reading a lot about it recently, because I gotta be honest, since Valhalla did come out, I actually have gone back, not only just asking about the previous games, I've read up on them, like how they were made. I'm always very curious to just see how the different iterations have changed over the years, and it's so ironic, or at least it's funny and coincidental, I should say, not ironic, but in Origins, for example, it's very big.
The map's with different huge deserts.
Yeah, and there's certain areas of the map that are just absolutely gigantic, and there are places in this game where there literally is nothing but desert, according to just certain reviews and other notes I've read about it. There's just nothing. It's just a desert. And it's to give you the impression that this is a world that you're exploring and going through. And it's so funny because I even saw feedback from other consumers that are just saying, ugh, you know, like, why? Like, why is there nothing in these types of games? And I've seen it for other games, too, even, which one specifically? Mad Max, when it came out. Great game, but a lot of the primary complaints was that, you know, it's just a big world and there's nothing really in it. And even in my experience, too, Borderlands. Even though Borderlands still had that kind of sectioned-off area in the game, there were still not a lot of things to do in those games. It's just a lot of space. And I think that always comes up with games like these where you really don't know what you're going to do with all the space when you have it, because it's just so much. And not only is it only taxing on the development cycles of these games because you have to fill them, but it's never going to be like, what is enough? What is enough for anybody? And is it going to be bloated? Because that's what happens half the time. It ends up being too much, and you don't even want to do half that. At this point, when I was playing this game, I was thinking, you know, I wouldn't even be mad if they just nixed it and they just made it sectioned off by area and you just fast traveled, and that'd be fine.
I think it is going to be that, but it, like you said, I mean, AC Odyssey has a lot of bloat in it, and the thing is, I think the way your world feels really depends on how you tailor it. Like, there are corners of AC Odyssey's world where you basically never have to go to, but there's still so much to do in the game that kind of doesn't matter. Whereas, I think to, like, Rage 2, and that world is so empty, it fucking, like, I didn't play much of Rage 2 because within the first few hours, I just felt so fucking bored.
That's so funny that it's just another apocalyptic shooter that also was just empty.
Yeah, it's that was one that stuck with me almost immediately, where I was like, this just doesn't do anything for me.
I will say, to be fair, if you were in the Mad Max type of universe, of course the place is going to be fucking empty. The whole thing's going to be empty. It's a post-apocalyptic world.
Except for where there are settlements, yeah.
Yeah, except for where there's... Exactly. Except where the people are. Which, in the name post-apocalyptic,
just like Ariel
said,
to be
many.
I want to be where the people are.
But it's so funny because, you know, when you do think about it, it's... I mean, in the case of, say, Rage 2 or even Mad Max, I would think it's more so just style over substance. I think, obviously, they just focus on getting an overworld rather than...
Yeah.
Putting in too much time to put stuff in it. They probably didn't have time. But that kind of fits with the theme. I mean, go to the Mad Max world. Tell me how much shit there is around there. I'll let you know. Fury Road, the entire premise of Fury Road is that they're just traveling an endless desert and wasteland. Like, there's nothing there. If they made a Mad Max game again based on Fury Road, I guarantee the same thing would happen, because it's just like, what's out there?
The road between settlements where people are trying to kill each other.
Yeah, and it's miles. Like, we're talking miles that are days out. So I understand it on one side of the fence, but chances are it's just you kind of have to reach this balance. And when I'm thinking about it in a Final Fantasy sense, I mean, was the overworld at the time really...
No.
Really it was crucial? No, but in 7, it was such a big deal because, again, it was a technological stride and advancement in gaming. So you're just thinking, whoa, like, I'm going to have that. But now it's... I'm kind of the mind where I'm thinking,
it's the same thing.
The quality that I see now in the game without worrying about this overworld of traveling all over the... Okay, let it happen. Also,
it was stretches of road between the things that mattered. And to me, I think the easiest way to do that is to... And I think we even said this last time, was put like what 15 had, like these roads that don't... Maybe there's not much, there's monsters wandering around, but it'll be, you know, you either take chocobos from, you know, Calm to the chocobo farm and to the marsh. When you get the buggy, eventually at the golden saucer, now you have the buggy and you're just following roads through like forested areas to where you go next. It doesn't need to be anything amazing and substantial, but it makes it feel like the world has some sort of connection.
Yeah, and frankly, the only primary reason I think about it in that way is just because if that helps the developers and just helps get the game out, I mean, okay,
totally.
Just
yeah,
bother at that point. Just let it happen. And I have a feeling that people will still be upset about that because they just want the exact carbon copy of the
people
game,
are always going to be upset, and they're
you
not
do it.
They're not going to get that carbon copy. A lot of the choices made in the
15.
remake make that clear.
15's a living example of what happens when you do that. It was kind of okay, but you know, like the open world wasn't really necessary.
No.
Okay. I mean, the hunting missions that you would get to go hunt those monsters, and that was cool. But again, it's how often did you really need to, and also did you really want to? Dragon Quest.
To be fair, those hunting missions were good enough that they spun them into their own game.
Oh yeah, for sure, and they were long enough where they could be their own thing. It was cool. But even say Dragon Quest, like Dragon Quest 11, fantastic game. But every time I play a Dragon Quest and I have to go on the ship and sail around to all the different islands with no inkling as to where I'm going to go, it just kind of gets kind of annoying.
It's a lot, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a lot. Just because I know they're trying to be nostalgic and keep their predecessors' concepts, but it's just like...
Also, when you get the Highwind at FF7, I am comfortable with it just being a map screen from the Highwind
exactly
where you
that.
Can choose
Let
where you're going.
Let it happen. Because this is not supposed to be... The only exceptions to these that I've seen are where games are self-reliant on that entire concept, which Breath of the Wild has done. Even Breath of the Wild, a game that has spanned 10 out of 10s everywhere. I would even say that got boring at some parts. It gets
totally
boring at some parts. It's not every nook and cranny of the goddamn game is so
a lot of it
captivating.
Is empty.
Yes,
but that's
it is.
The nature of, like... That's the nature of worlds, when you think of it. Like, it's the idea of, if we didn't build a civilization in an area, what would it be? It would be empty. Maybe there's some wildlife, but otherwise it would be empty.
And in Breath of the Wild, they kind of accounted for that by, frankly, they filled it in where it did matter most. But it was enjoyable enough to just go explore around, because I think the exploration... I think it's because the methods as to which you can explore... were, again, very open to you. There weren't any real barriers. You could just truly go anywhere. And it kind of just did it right in the sense that, you know, it really didn't need to give you much. It was just saying, hey, go, you know, there's some secrets here and there, and you can go find them, but if not,
hey,
don't worry about it.
Get out there.
Yeah, get out there. And even then, it wasn't perfect. I don't think there has been a perfect open-worldy type of game that... truly exists. I think every game is going to suffer from just something.
Breath of the Wild.
Even Fallout 3, even New Vegas, one of my absolute favorites. You know, there are certain points that are just like,
yeah,
it's kind of sloppy.
Yeah,
you're never going to get it right 100% of the time.
It's impossible. You're not going to please everyone.
No. So I don't know. I hope that in terms of just concept design discussions, they just take it and just go, yeah, what if we did this? And they take a piece of... No, they take a map. They take a map of the overworld. They put it on the whiteboard. And they go, this is Final Fantasy
VII. This is the stuff.
They go, now, what if... And they just crumple it all and throw it in the trash. And everyone just goes...
Wow!
Go, forget it. Like, let it happen.
What if we just make part of Final Fantasy VIII and just make that the sequel?
Yeah, let it happen.
The second part. All right, moving off that, I'm going to run us through the drop for this coming week real quick.
Yay.
First off, Best Friends Forever comes to PC, Switch, Switch May 14th. TT, Isle of Man, Ride on the Edge 2 comes to Switch on May 14th. What a title.
How?
Hold on. Doing a little research, are we?
That's a copy-paster.
While you do a research, I'll keep going.
Sir.
Hatsune Miku, Project Diva Megamix comes to Switch on May 15th. Tales from Off-Peak City Volume 1 comes to PC on May 15th. Those Who Remain comes to PC, PS4, and Xbox One on May 15th. Terraria Journey's End Update comes to PC on May 16th. Golf with Your Friends comes to PS4, Xbox One, and Switch on May 19th. Warhammer 40K Mechanicus comes to Switch on May 19th. And lastly, The Wonderful 101 Remastered comes to PC, PS4, and Switch Digital in the US on May 19th.
That's pretty hype. Shout out to Terraria, because you know what?
People fucking love them some Terraria.
That game has gone on for so long, and I have some fond memories of that. And it's crazy how it's still going without coming up with a second iteration of itself. That's wild. You could argue Starbound is that, but it's not really.
They're similar, but I think Terraria has found more success.
The Journey's End. Hold on.
That's the final update, right?
Yeah, I have to assume.
Based off the title.
Journey's End. Yeah, it's called Journey's End, for God's sakes. Yeah, it looks like the final one. That's pretty cool, though. And I looked up Isle of Man. I did. Listen, this game is reviewed well. People are calling it one of the best motorbike games, and it's rocking some
that
solid
I
7 out of 10.
Can't tell you I would have guessed that's what it was.
But this is what I'm talking about. Like, you have a decent game here. It's getting 7 out of 10s across the board. It's by no means, like, you know, a joke. It's a game that was very seriously created. Where does the naming conventions come
where
out
do
of here?
We get off?
Yeah, where do they get off here? I mean, it's literally called TT Isle of Man, Ride on the Edge. It's, why?
Right on the edge, I get.
Motorbike Madness.
I'm sure that's taken. I promise you that's taken.
So they have to come out with this? The Isle of Madness.
Just call it
call,
Sneak King 2.
You ever call just every continent on the... You ever just call every continent on Earth the Isle of Man? What you're standing on right now...
Welcome to the Isle of Man.
Built on the foundation of the Isle of Man. That's so wild to me, but I like the name. I laugh because it's so wacky and
but
so unique. You'll never forget it.
It's so insane that like we looked into it, so I guess it's working.
I have to, and you know what? This comes up several times in future conversations. We're gonna say, you know what's a really fucking weird name? The Isle of Man, and then you get
and it's a motorcycle game.
Yeah, and it's a motorbike game. Wild. Right. The Xbox event.
Yeah, I
almost forgot about that.
I just kind of read the highlights, so I guess I'll let you run me through it. But it seems like people were kind of like, meh.
Okay, just for context, there was an Xbox Series X event last week. This was pretty much just a gameplay reveal. That's what it was touted as and sold as. It was an Xbox Series X gameplay reveal where Microsoft was going to show off all the different developed games that were going to be coming to the Series X on launch, or at least close to it, just to give consumers, listen, you know, like, this is what we're bringing to the table. Get hype. It was a hype event. Yeah, and I always like to check those out, because you know what? Especially in the virtual age that we're in now, with all these events canceled, these are pretty much the events that are going to be generating some console sales later in the year, especially for myself as a consumer. So, I checked it out last week, and yeah, it was some disappointing stuff.
Hooray!
And it's mainly just because when we're talking about the name, and this is something that Microsoft is guilty of. It's something that, you know what, in the past decade, I'm thinking every single publisher and developer is just like, oh, hey, you want to see like a gameplay showcase? Well, let's show it to you. And they show no gameplay. It's just trailers or announcement trailers with some brief little snippets or clips of the game being played, yes, which could count, I'm sure, as gameplay.
They technically
but
count.
Everybody's expecting a couple of minutes of a demo.
Because that's what they were promised, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think of the various E3 shows or other showcases that have been done before where they start the presentation with some random dude on the floor just playing with the controller on the stage, and they do the... I'm not expecting such a high production value kind of event, but I'm imagining that somebody would just play a little bit of it. Like, show the trailer, show me a little bit of it, and say, hi, I'm so-and-so. Let's see a couple of features of this game right now that you could... It's like, I actually have thought about it, and I can't remember the last time I saw that. Besides, I don't know, Harmonix showing the Guitar Hero stuff on stage.
Which is a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just me. I'm sure somebody's going to say, oh, well, listen, this literally happened
What about this?
Yeah, what about this a year ago, you jackass? And I'll agree, but we're talking about, you know, main stage of events being touted as a gameplay event, and that's what you're
from
kind of
one
expecting.
Of the big three in game development.
Yeah, and it was just a trailer show, and you know, they were just it was a marketing stunt through and through, where Microsoft knew they would get people to come in to see it and listen, respect the game. You gotta respect the game here. I get it, but I don't know. I was kind of bummed. Because then at the end, they were like, hey, make sure to check out our future event that's coming up soon. We're going to show you some exclusives. And I was thinking, you know,
all right,
fuck you. And I was like, no. I was like, fuck you. I'm like, you totally just baited me. You get me into this, and then you say, hey, come check out the cool stuff we have. Oh, by the way, you thought that was cool? There's an even cooler thing.
I didn't think that was cool.
Yeah, come in next time.
That was the big surprise when I go, I didn't actually think that was cool.
Yeah, what if next time I come back, and they still slapped me across the face, and they said, what were you expecting here? I was just thinking, I don't know.
Yeah, you like that?
To be honest with you. I don't know.
I have no one to blame but myself.
That happened, yeah, and I know I was telling you about it. The best way that I can describe it and the way that I described it to Rich was that this was an hour-long event. Out of the handful of games that they did show, after immediately watching it, I could probably only recall 2 to 3 of them by name.
Cool. That's great
and
stuff.
And one of them was Yakuza.
Yeah.
And I gotta admit, if I didn't know... If Yakuza didn't have the name brand that it did, that still wouldn't have hyped me up if I didn't know what the hell it was. Because I have faith in the developer team, and I know they're going to be delivering a great game, and I've seen it already with the graphics and how cool it already looks. If I had no background of that, the trailer that they showed basically gave me no context, and it wouldn't have hyped me up at all. It would have just been like, what
is this? That's
a shame. It is.
Yakuza 7, baby. Though yeah. It's not called Yakuza 7 here.
Nope, it's, was it Rise Like a Dragon?
It's Yakuza Like a Dragon, because...
Like a Dragon.
The games are not called Yakuza in Japan. They're called Ryuga Goteku, which literally translates to Like a Dragon.
Yeah, there were a lot of spooky games that were shown, though. A lot of weirdy, gory games, some cyberpunky games outside of Cyberpunk 2099, and, it was okay. I'm glad to see newly developed games, but none of them sold me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't care to look any of them up because I don't know why I should care.
I almost said, but it's not true. Anyways, be like, yeah, they brought back Scalebound.
Yeah, also that too. You don't know what's going to make it truly or not. I got to be honest, you don't know some of these times.
I was interested in Scalebound.
I forgot about Scalebound. Let that die. Somebody else brought up Scalebound on...
that was Platinum,
was like
right?
Twitter or something. Yeah. Somebody reignited Scalebound just in terms of conversation. I looked it up again and got disappointed all over again because it looked and sounded so cool. And they just abandoned it, so it sucks.
It's a shame.
But the other game that... Which other ones? There was Vampires the Masquerade Bloodlines 2, which I know... has a very, very strong cult following from a lot of people who really dig that game. And this is the second iteration of this game that's coming out, so I imagine there's a lot of hype for it. But again, I see a trailer for this thing. If I didn't know what this was...
Yeah, and...
I was like, even now, I don't play Vampire the Masquerade, and I'm not going to, I just know myself. It was like an immediate pass. I was like, fuck this.
Well, yeah, like, I won't even go off a trailer for that. Like, any appeal it would have for me is, I know the first game is an incredibly deep and beloved RPG.
Yeah.
So, like, if you want to go off that, like, literally, if for people who aren't familiar with Vampire the Masquerade, like, that is a weirdly deep RPG that if you know what you're doing, you can beat in about an hour, depending on how you play. The races are so varied. There's a race in that game called the Nosferatu, which look like, you know, the Nosferatu vampire.
The Nosferatu.
And the whole, like, caveat of them is they're considered, like, the hard mode race to play. Because they're so grotesque looking, you cannot leave the sewer area of the game or people will just attack you because you're clearly a vampire.
And you want to know something? It's all of that rich feature content and other aspects of the game that it's made up of that you would never have guessed from looking at this. Ever.
Yeah.
Which is why it's a big crime when you're showing these kinds of things and not showing gameplay, because you know what? I still wouldn't know.
Well, it's a crime when you use the word gameplay and then don't show any.
Well, that too. But again, think of a game that is so well regarded, like the Vampire Masquerade games. Again, I don't play it, but there's so many cool features to it that you just mentioned, right? I got none of that from that. From this trailer, it was just an announcement trailer. It was a bunch of vampires, like, dancing around, being all murderous.
Masquerading.
There's this dude on the dance floor. This chick vampire was like, hey, come over here. Let's dance because, you know,
you're
sexy. Yeah, she bites him in the middle of the dance floor. Nobody seems to know. Whatever, that's fine. And that's the trailer. And you're just supposed to sit there and guess that there's so much rich gameplay? Like, I have no idea. So you're not even selling to a new audience at this point. You're just selling to the old audience.
The built-in audience.
The old audience is going to know what's up. To me, I just think of that as like, oh, great, it's another, it's a fucking vampire game. Like, okay. Like, it didn't do anything for me. And I'm afraid that's what happened with a lot of it. And even more so, I think after that show, interestingly enough, they did release other trailers of gameplay for these things, but it didn't make sense as to why it wasn't shown
then. in the event. Yeah,
it was just very odd, and it didn't get me hyped at all, and it was just like, okay.
Also, you'd think you'd want to tailor these events better nowadays. Like, you know, people are stuck at home. You got more eyes in these events than you probably normally would.
Yeah, for sure. And just get the dev to just be like, hey guys, really excited. Like,
just
anything.
Get Mark Cerny to show
up. That's how it was at E3. The devs would come out and just say, yo, what's going on? We made this game. This is what you do. I understand that, you know, especially in these times, it's not so simple. But you had one of the fucking GMs of Microsoft come on with his webcam that also just looked like a blurry mess. And I was just like, that's fine. Like, I don't even care. Just give me anybody. Anybody in front of the camera to just say, listen, this is our game. We're actually really proud of this because we're going to introduce it. Just get me hyped. Because right now, that doesn't do anything.
Then Mark Cerny hacked the press conference.
I wish. Oh, my God. You talk about people being pissed at Cerny when, frankly, I'm not even a fanboy of any console whatsoever. It was pretty well laid out as to what the hell that was.
Oh, yeah,
was
yeah.
Was it marketed,
yeah.
though, as a PS5 showcase? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. And they, Sony.
And that
Sony
was a
tripping.
Poor, poor decision. But,
yeah,
hey,
don't get me wrong. Sony was tripping.
Cerny did the show he intended to do. How they marketed it for him is not in his hands.
Yeah. It was just a very weird kind of conference-y, not even a conference-y thing, just a showcase. And I'm not going to watch the other one until it's over, and then I can get a synopsis, because I thought I just wasted my time. I was just thinking, eh. There was even rumors floating around that maybe I'd see Elden Ring, and I was an idiot. I was a big idiot, and I believed it too. I said, wow, can't wait to see an Elden Ring.
Listen, man, George R. R. Martin can't finish his books. You think he's going to finish a video game?
No. No,
yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, that's what you get.
No, I don't. I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like you go expect that you know how it's going to be. So what I am hoping for is that in future showcases, I hope this is just any slip up that these companies are making, I'm actually okay to give them passes because, again, we're dealing in uncertain times. I get it. But I hope that Sony, I hope that Ubisoft, I hope that all these devs look at this shit and they just say, I'm not doing that. Like, we're not doing that. Like, forget that.
Oh, we're not doing that.
Yeah, like, we're clearly not doing that, right? Like, that's not going to happen the same
way. That's silly, right?
Give me a showcase that actually just shows some stuff. It's just, it feels so soulless.
Give me the showcase showdown.
Yeah, I mean, what do you expect from those kinds of shows? Like, what do you expect?
Honestly, at this point, I think I kind of expect what we got. Because I feel like they're almost filling the gap of what E3 was, in a sense. It's like, it's going to be a sizzle reel of mostly cinematic trailers, and then if you want the deeper gameplay trailers, you got to dig around the internet after the fact. They're going to drop somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think that's necessarily the right move. I just think that's what it is.
No, it is. It's just, it's the definition of insane. I expect something different to happen from nostalgia of how it used to be with showcases like that, but it's not the same anymore because it's a different type of presentation model now. You can get away with all that, so it doesn't really matter too much. And I'm just like, okay, but yeah, I realize that just sounded incredibly salty over it. It's just because I like to get hyped. I like hype.
Everybody likes hype.
And I gotta be honest, I really am. As much as I love the PS4, and I obviously Sony was the undisputed winner of that console, this made-up figmental console race, that's not real.
I know the one.
Yeah, I mean, I like Sony because I invested in the Sony and not an Xbox One at all, but I'm kind of rooting for Microsoft to make a comeback with this Xbox Series X, and everything I'm hearing about it seems pretty damn good on paper. It's just, none of this is convincing me, hey, we back. It's just saying,
but
hey.
It's all, we'll see. I mean, these events aren't going to convince me of much.
No, and they never did, but I just like getting hyped for more games. I'm a disappointed fan. That's all.
That's I'm okay. A disappointed You're allowed. Guy.
But we're gonna see though. They apparently said they're gonna have another showcase, whatever the fuck that is.
Yeah, and, whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever that means. I'm not doing it anymore. You lost me. It's over.
You lost me, fella.
You won me with Cerny, oddly enough. I was salty, but you won me over. But now I'm back.
Welcome back.
And I think that in the future, too, gameplay, I'm going to be very wary of gameplay. I think everybody should be wary of gameplay.
Weary of the word gameplay.
Yeah, gameplay, if you're talking about a big boy like Microsoft, Sony, or et cetera, saying gameplay, wait till you see a demo, because don't expect it. You ain't going to get it. It ain't happening. That's not the way the industry has done it these days. But we'll see.
Oh, we'll see.
What do you think, Rich? I need to hear your thoughts about this. What do you think about the Series X?
I think I'm probably not going to buy one of those right away, because it seems like anything that is going to be exclusive to that, I'm going to be able to play on my PC.
Yeah, it's true. And I don't know. I just need some. There's no reason to justify paying $600 or $500 for a game like that when you do have it on the PC.
And it comes down to the, like, if I'm going to buy one of these consoles at launch, it's going to be the PS5, because over the years, I've come to know what to expect from Sony exclusives, and I like what I get out of them.
That's what I'm saying. Exclusives, I gotta say, it's always...
Sell the hardware.
They do. I always say this, too. I think on every show we talk about exclusives, and we're talking about being cross-gen and cross-platform. I'm a fan of exclusives. I'm a fan of them. I think it, honestly, you get some of the best work from people, from their publisher in-house teams. Like, you get the Naughty Dog. You get the Sucker Punch. You get a lot of them that are just exclusive. And you get some of the best work. And it does, yeah, it boosts the brand of the console. And I'm a fan of that. I like competition. I do. I think it forces the other person to really look at this
from
a critical
lens
and say, what are we going to do?
I like it when
people fight for what
I like. What? I like it when people fight for me liking their stuff.
Yeah. I like to be catered to and say, hey, Eric, please, buy this game. The Ghost of, what's it called? Ghost of
Tsushima.
I knew it was Tsushima, but I didn't want to say it. I had a feeling I was going to butcher it. The Ghost of Tsushima, I have to say, I've seen barely anything on it. It looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, it has a great look to it.
It's looking awesome. And I barely know anything about it, but you got me. And I'm already in, and I got eyes on it. And
I know
it's
that
it's exclusive, and I'm in it.
I know that there are no map markers.
This is by the same team that bought me the Thievius Raccoonus. You could bet your ass I'm going to be playing this game.
I don't know if that's the one big thing I know about it. They touted how there are no map markers. You got to kind of, like, go off what NPCs tells you. They're like, you gotta go west and then you'll see a shrine.
I gotta say, I heard that and I said, oh god, this is gonna be the biggest... I was just thinking, this is gonna be the biggest pain in the ass I've ever played.
And I go, the only city I can navigate on my own is New York because it's a grid.
People don't know what they... This is what I'm talking about. Like, same with Overworlds. You don't know what you want until you get it. And you're just thinking, this is the biggest pain in the ass. I can only imagine everyone's like, yeah, finally, well, like... No hand-holding, and then they're looking for this shrine. They're just online going, where's the shrine?
That's what's funny is, like, Assassin's Creed Odyssey has that as an option. You could turn off guide markers, and they ask you at the beginning of the game if you want that, and I'm like, fuck no.
Absolutely.
I ain't got time
not.
For this shit.
I don't got... It's not... I guarantee you I will not feel any less immersed if I have a waypoint to just say, listen, go here. If Skyrim made me engrossed in the world and had waypoints, I think any other game will be okay. I don't need to suffer anymore.
It doesn't break reality for me that Vikings might have had a GPS.
I remember years ago after Skyrim, because I was fresh off the hype of Elder Scrolls, because I'd only played Oblivion and Skyrim, and I was thinking, you know, Morrowind is the wave. Everyone's like, you got to drink this Kool-Aid. And I said, hell yeah. And I downloaded it. No waypoints. I was thinking, wow, official RPG. Read the scrolls. Talk to the NPCs. You'll find your way. I was lost, and it was rough. It was some rough stuff.
So you had a
we
great
are
time.
Spoiled these days, but I like waypoints. I'm going to keep them. But Ghosts, I'm thinking maybe they're probably going to design it to be easier, too. People have to have come along
by
saying, you know.
It'll be an option.
The average consumer, such as myself, is dumber than a pile of rocks. So I gotta give me give me some leeway here.
It's not even about stupidity at this point. I just know I don't have time for that.
Well, that... Listen, it's just being able to... Because a developer will tell you, how did you clearly not find this, you dummy? There's a clue right here. And to your point, I would say, I don't know. I was making it... I was hungry. I wanted to go make a sandwich. I didn't want to do this.
I had just ordered a pizza, and I was thinking about delicious Italian sausage.
Yeah, I was thinking about delicious Italian sausage in the back of my mind. I had no drive to dedicate brain space to this. It's true. But I'm really hyped for those specific types of exclusives. So even though I know the Series X has none right now, besides Halo, I'm kind of hoping. I'm crossing fingers here. I want to see more Halo.
I don't know that I do.
Why? Don't you want to see more?
Because the last two didn't do much for me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I want to... I felt this
Yeah,
deep...
no, I'm excited to see what Halo 6 is. And Halo Infinite, I'm sorry.
I felt this old feeling of hype that was just buried under, you know, just the years. It was old. But when I saw the Halo Infinite trailer, I felt a little pulse in there. And I was thinking, I kind of want to be hyped for Halo again. But they're just not making it easy. They just don't make it easy.
It was a void even Nathan Fillion couldn't fill.
No. No, he couldn't. Nathan Fillion could not. Trying his damnedest to just say, listen, look at me. I'm the guy from Firefly. Remember Firefly?
He'll charm my pants off. I was rewatching Community, and I recently got to the episode where he's the head custodian.
Oh, that was a good one.
Fucking quality programming.
Community on Netflix is fantastic, but just like get me hyped for it again. Sell it to me, as you said. Make me want to buy your game. Master Chief getting powered up and wiping his helmet, and everyone's like, "Yo, I'm fucking hyped." I'm like, no. Like, this doesn't generate hype. This just generates a little film, a little student side project that I saw in class one day. It looks nice. I just want gameplay. Give me the brass tacks.
Bring it on down.
Bringing on down the red carpet.
Keeping it moving right along. We got another... I'm wondering if you want to get into this topic, because I think it could be big, or if you want to save it for next time.
Give it to me. Give it to me right now.
Okay, so you got this piece here about bootleg game soundtracks.
It's like, you bring up them in a little folder. You got this piece right here.
So, this is by... What? This is coming from Game Industry, right?
What?
This the article's coming.
I'm in love. This is literally no freaking mystery that I have such a hard on for.
We don't even have to like dig into the like in depth layer of the piece. Like, I just think that's like a good conversation point because you and I, two people collecting game soundtracks on vinyl and such. My easy thought on this is like, I'm sure it is doing some damage to the industry, but there are times when I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel bad when the music isn't readily available elsewhere.
Yeah, that was going to be my exact stance on it too. I'm actually glad you said it first, because that was going to be mine. I didn't want to come off as a hard-pressed contrarian to everything about
like,
it.
Like, the fact of the matter to me is, like, yeah, I don't think I should have to feel bad if I use Nintendo as a big example, because they don't make their music available. And in that way, like, I want to have their music. If they were selling it, I'd prefer to buy it from them. But they don't make it available to us.
Yeah, and for the listeners too. So video game vinyl, Rich and I have talked about this a few times, how we get into it here and there, because video game vinyl, frankly, in the past 5 years has caught on. And it's pretty hype these days in terms of what they're releasing. You'd be hard pressed, honestly, to find a limited run type of game or I Am 8-Bit or any actual indie game that really catches fire or becomes a trailblazer and doesn't have a vinyl released for them. Even Sea of Stars, the Kickstarter that was being released by Sabotage, it has a stretch goal for the vinyl. Very big, and it's coming back onto the scene, especially with the hipster crowd.
That was the level I went in on the Kickstarter. It wasn't even a stretch goal. It's just one of the backing tiers promises you a limited edition version of the vinyl.
I looked on the late pledge and I didn't find it, and I kind of wept.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It was my fault. I didn't back it when I should have. I was nabbing at the bit. It's going to be the same component for Chrono Trigger. It's like, you can't mess that up.
I redeemed my first round of rewards from that. So if you could see it through the camera, I got my my phone background.
Oh, I'm so hyped for that game. But the whole thing is that with these vinyls that are coming out, you have a lot more verifiable pressers and publishers that are pushing these out in the industry and selling them through IM8-Bit. I believe Fangamer has some.
Yeah, Fangamer.
You have from Ship to Shore. I actually bought the Mother 2 and Castlevania The Adventure Rebirth because I found them there. Mondo presses some records that are from video games. I got all my Castlevanias from them.
Square Enix does some of their own through
they did Final Fantasy now, because I think they're catching on.
I have Final Fantasy 7, and they did the remake and the original together.
I texted you about that. I can't fucking find it. I can't fucking find it now. I'm an idiot.
I almost slept on it, and then I got it through their Amazon store. It was sold out on their main store.
I'm sleeping right now. It's just popular.
Yeah, totally.
And
I picked up Cuphead just recently.
I got actually, that so. Too. See, that's a good one.
Yeah, you got it at PAX.
I did.
Yeah,
yes.
I ended up getting it after the fact.
One of them that I just really want that I can't right now because it's always sold out is always the Undertale one. That's always one that I want.
I had to sleep on them for a little while. Cuphead rather was my last indulgence because I'm now I need to be smarter now that I have a much larger.
We gotta wait.
Payment.
I've stopped buying. I stopped buying these months ago. I think the only one that really came out. No, that's not true. No, that's not true. Okay, the one that did press my faith was the Bloodstained one.
Oh,
I did buy that.
Bloodstained, I had to skip on because like I
had a feeling I wouldn't see that again without paying a price.
That was my feeling on the FF7 one. So
I don't blame you.
The 7 bucks or whatever it was.
Yeah, and even I was feeling a certain way about it. I was a little regretful for buying it, but I don't think I will later. But anyways, besides it coming on the scene into popularity even more so now, I mean, again, 2 to 3 years ago, these did not exist. You did not have people or even websites like IMA, but you didn't have them pressing at all. You didn't have them making these vinyls. You didn't have publisher and developer support to make these vinyls. As Richard was saying earlier, like, Nintendo's not doing this. They don't care. I don't want to say that, but they don't see interest in doing it.
And like
so it
Nintendo,
hasn't
if they eventually do it, like, it'll be so late to the party.
Yeah, I actually really hope they do because they're the kind of people that show up late to the party that everyone hopes comes to the party.
Yeah. It,
so I really feel like it'll incentivize a lot of other developers
to
say, hell yeah.
When they do come late to the party, like, the fact of the matter is, even if I bought a couple bootlegs of their music by that point, I will buy the official ones for the ones I want.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, so you got these bootleggers, and Rich, I know you. There were some bootleggers in the article, basically, that they do reference. I'm a part of several different Facebook groups.
You bootleg vinyls is what you're saying.
I am not a bootlegger. I gotta be honest with you. I wish I had the skill and know-how to do so. I would make some fat tracks,
but just for you.
Yes, for me, and maybe even you, just for a small circle.
Yeah.
And they talk about in this article in Game Industry Biz. This is by, let me just see his name too. It's the editor in chief, Matt Handrahan. I'm just gonna say that.
Handrahan. Yeah, it seems right.
But he wrote this very, very in-depth article as to whether bootleg game soundtracks are damaging the industry, and piracy in music has always been a topic ever since we entered the digital age. Even before that, when it was in the vinyl age in the early 1900s, so it's not a new thing. But we're talking about video game soundtracks here, and they're not. Let's just say they're not mainstream. They're a very niche market. And the conversation
niche,
that he was trying, the dialogue that he was trying to have was, listen, are these bootleg pressers, people who work independently and go to pressers and make their own soundtracks for a very, very small circle of people. It's very hush, don't ask, don't tell kind of groups, you know, that nobody knows about. You know, is it wrong? You know, are they actually killing an industry for that? And they asked several people, or prominent figures, one of them being my composing lord and savior, David Wise from Donkey Kong Country. You know, what do you think about that? And frankly, I share your exact viewpoint on that, Rich, because if the argument that a lot of bootleggers are immediately going to have is, listen, it's not going to be released in any traditional means anyways. And to me, I kind of do believe that. I do believe that because the proof is in the pudding, and
there's no market to cut into.
There's nothing. There's nothing at all, and Nintendo's not going to move on this. Nintendo's not going to make a vinyl. They're not making vinyls. It's not.
Not
that's not
soon,
what they
at least.
Do. That's not what they do. I mean, you could say the same thing for Capcom because Capcom's been in the game now. Konami's been in the game with Castlevania. They love to monetize and whore their shit out so far. But they've monetized.
The only
and
thing
made,
Konami doesn't do
money.
With its properties is make games.
Yeah, so they're willing to do anything but make more. So I have even purchased a bootleg soundtrack or two, and I thought it was so coincidental that David Wise was reached out to comment on this because one of my bootlegs is Donkey Kong Country 2. It is. And I can tell you that one of the labelers, the independent labelers who does bootleg, did make a Donkey Kong Country 1 record that is so expensive because there's so few of them that are out in the wild that it's one of my holy grails that I want to own one day because it's not going to get released.
Yeah.
And do I feel bad about that? Do I feel bad that I'm not putting my money in David Wise's pocket? Yeah, of course I do. But I think this goes beyond the conversation sometimes of, you know, should we feel some moral guilt over whether these guys are going to compensate? Because it's not like we're strangleholding the market. There's no market.
The market doesn't exist
here. Yeah, there's no market here. And Nintendo, it's not their fault, of course. That's not what I'm driving at. But it's not like they're making moves to give a flip. You know, it just is what it is. And frankly, it's just to enjoy the music. I just like the music. So one point that was brought up in this article, though, is the reason why I did want to bring it up, is that, you know, the CEOs of IM8Bit, they were even saying, listen, they kind of took the similar stance of our side of just saying, I don't think it is. I don't think there's really, I think whatever bad
where
comes
the official
from,
ones exist, people are buying the official ones.
Yeah,
is my understanding.
They were even just saying, like, whatever bad is happening to this, and I think they're using it with some sense of brevity here, you know, whatever bad is truly happening, I mean, I think the good outweighs it. You know, from distributing the bootleg records, I would even go as far to say that that probably ignited a lot of incentive for people to make their records.
To make official ones, yeah.
Yes,
and the fact of the matter
absolutely.
Is, like you said, where are you finding bootlegs? You're finding bootlegs are the ones that aren't readily available. Like, no one's making a bootleg of Ori and the Will of the Wisps because there's an official release of Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Yeah, and even the ones that are bootlegged, you can't really find them. They're not in copious amounts that are being circulated throughout the market like anything else that you would find. In fact, there's so few of them that you really have to pay an arm and a leg just to get them. I think I paid genuinely 3 times the market rate for what this vinyl for Donkey Kong Country 2 would have gone for, just because I'm such a diehard fan of it that I wanted it.
Totally.
But you can't, the one that's even more elusive, there's an F-Zero one that was pressed a
yeah,
while
you
ago.
Yeah, you told me about this one.
It is without a doubt one of the coolest things I've seen. And it is hundreds of dollars, if you can even find it. It's ridiculous. So, frankly, I don't even think it's hurting anything, because nothing, they're not buying things in troves, and you can't really get them. I think, if anything, it actually has helped the industry some. Ori and the Will of Wisps, to your exact point, that wouldn't have never existed. You would have never seen an Ori vinyl,
yeah,
ever.
But there's a market for it, and so companies like IM8Bit make a point to reach out to these indie devs and say, hey, your game's got a phenomenal soundtrack. It's a, you know, cult indie following. Like, we should make a vinyl for it.
For sure. And even, I even got to give props to the people who make orchestral arrangements of these soundtracks, too. One of them, they made, I'm forgetting, oh, I feel terrible because I forget the site, but there are a lot of other distributors who make orchestral arrangements or different kind of arrangements of these soundtracks of these games. For example, I do have a Donkey Kong Country orchestral arrangement that was created, and I'm feeling terrible because I'm drawing a blank and I'm not going to get it right now, but I'll get it later. And
you monster.
It's just an instrumental rendition of these games. There's one for, I think there's one for Chrono Trigger that was released. There's one for Final Fantasy. There's one for there are different kinds of arrangements. But the argument at the end of the day that people who do buy some bootlegs are saying is, I don't want an arrangement.
I want official music, yeah.
The actual music. And if the answer to that is, well, it's not there, then go to the course. Straight
to
the course, then, if you
go
want.
To the
I'm
only
more so
option.
Of an open mind with it.
Totally.
You know, and people have made it their business. I'm not about taking money from people. David Wise said it best, even in this article. The fact of the matter is, foundationally, if you do bootleg, you're taking money out of people's pockets. You are. I'm not going to pretend like I'm a saint here.
Yeah.
But there's no way to do it. If I want to put David Wise's money in his pocket, I would sooner make a donation to David Wise personally and send him cash than have to wait maybe 5 to 10 years just for Nintendo to give a flip.
Yep.
And just say, okay. It's just not worth it to me.
There's no,
it's like, who cares?
There's no real recourse.
No, because look at what it's fucking video game. I just want to listen to some tracks. I just want to listen to some Banana Slamma tracks. Like, what's the problem here?
Banana Slamma.
I would even go as far to say, because it was brought up briefly too, I would even go as far to say YouTube, SoundCloud, other internet streaming services, they are a bigger threat to that kind of shit than bootleg disc would ever be.
Yeah, that's fair ever. To say.
Because guess what? You talk about bootlegging, I can look at the Donkey Kong Country 2 soundtrack right now, and over the past 10 years, I've listened to that so many times. And F-Zero, and all my favorite tracks, and that was pro bono. That's free. And you can't You can't do anything about that.
No.
So
there's no
I would even
say
that's an even bigger threat. And I'm not trying to say, well, listen, lesser of two evils. Here, take, look at this fucking monster instead of this one. Don't. But at the end of the day, I mean, look at what you got.
To your credit, one of my favorite things to listen to while I'm writing is I have a YouTube playlist, and I've sent this to you before, that I've saved. That is all the Donkey Kong Country soundtracks with, like, a rain machine set behind it.
I love that one.
It sounds pretty awesome.
I have it bookmarked. I want to give you a thank you, too, because I bookmarked it. Yeah. But yeah, it's just the way it is, and I thought it was so interesting to bring up, because you know what? I'm a big fan of these vinyl soundtracks over time, and I have to be honest with you. I am never once the type of consumer who wants to cut corners to get everything for free. I mean, you were with me at PAX. We found that stand from the I'm 8-Bit stand. Or, I'm sorry, I think it was... Yeah, it was I'm 8-Bit.
Yeah, it was I'm 8-Bit.
I think. And, or, I think it was like Fangame or I'm 8-Bit Hybrid, whatever it was.
It was I'm 8-Bit.
I wanted, whatever they had, I wanted to buy.
Yeah, I bought...
Because I'm all about supporting that kind of stuff.
I bought the Messenger and I bought Florence that week.
Yeah, I bought Florence too. Fantastic. And the Messenger? Phenomenal. Like... If it's there, I'll buy it. The one thing I even saw was Crypt of the Necrodancer. Oh, wow, I want that. I want to buy that, and I will buy it one day. There are bootlegs that exist for all of these, but it's just not worth it. It's like...
And there's official channels that you can go through, and I'd much rather put money in the devs' pockets.
Yep, and the only other example I will give for this is Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
Banjo-Kazooie was released on Fangamer.
I have
Hell
that one
yeah.
also.
Fantastic, fantastic arrangement. Banjo-Kazooie
four LPs, baby.
Was released as a bootleg record. It was bootleg, 150%, and it cost so much money. And I tried over the years to get it because I was thinking, it's not going to come out. And guess what happens? It gets released and it gets pressed because they saw that there was interest for it and they made it, and it sold pretty damn well to my knowledge.
Also, yeah, there are two, Fangamer and IM8-Bit had versions of it. The Fangamer one you can still get. IM8-Bit has been gone for a long time, that pressing.
I think that's the one, too, that I was looking for as well. There was the bootleg one. There's a pressing of the IM8-Bit one that you can't get anymore.
And I just love the art on the Fangamer one, I'll say, is phenomenal. But the art on the IM8-Bit one is just an actual picture of a bear with a backpack on it.
I adore that art so much. It's so funny. I think of that and I'm just like, this is fucking hilarious. But there are other vinyls, too. I mean... There are ones that I want so badly that if somebody... I'm not even ashamed to say it. If somebody dangled a bootleg of it in my face and I knew it was the exact same thing, you're damn right I would buy it. We're talking about the Hotline Miami vinyl records that are not reproduced. They're not at all. I think they were a limited run thing.
Yep.
You're never going to see those again unless you pay out the ass for it. You're not going to see... It's Hotline Miami. Fudge, I already forgot I had a whole list. But the point is, I'm Oh, Hyperlight Drifter.
Yes.
I can't find that. You can't find that anywhere.
You know what the
it's
worst
impossible.
Part of some of these are? They never take them off the storefront. So you could just be going through and you click on it, and until you try to add it to your cart, you don't know it's not there.
IM 8-Bit haunts me. It haunts me because there's such
Persona 5 is the one over there that haunts me.
Yeah. Persona 5, it's so funny you mentioned that. That is one of the holy grails for a lot of people. They say, I need this, and it costs so much money.
It cost 100 at launch because it was a 4LP vinyl. I'm hanging on to the hope that they'll do a repressing for Persona 5 Royal because there are new tracks.
Well, IM8-Bit actually came out, and they said it's probably going to happen. They kind of teased it, but it's probably
That's what I'm holding on for because it would make sense because it's not just like it would be just the same thing again. There are new tracks in Royal.
I'm looking at the Hyperlight Drifter one, I'm getting salty. That's the point. They have such good ones, and, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody were to turn you away and said, oh, sorry, we're not going to make any more.
Okay. And I will say, I tried really hard to get a bootleg of Persona 4 Golden, but it's a hard one to get your hands on.
It is. It's hard. And also, what are you going to do at the end of the day? If this vinyl record from IM8-Bit, say for Hyperlight Drifter, it costs hundreds of dollars when the MSRP was $75, if somebody offered me something that was only $30, yeah, I'm going to go for it. That's just general. That's anybody's going to do that. So what I hope to see in the future, the whole point of this, is that I'm against bootlegging to the point where it's actually hurting people. But at the same time, until there's an actual steady flow of demand and production of these vinyl records, mm-hmm. and it's available widely when anybody wants them, which, again, isn't going to change to your point until a market actually materializes out of this thing, because right now it's very, very small, then no, I'm not going to really lose sleep over this kind of crap, because...
Nor should you.
No, not at all. Nobody should. If they, even if they have a bootleg and they just sit there and they go, oh, wow, I'm stealing my... No, you're... It's like...
You're a thief.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Okay.
I mean, all right.
Anybody who has a moral high ground to say you're a thief and then goes onto YouTube, in my opinion, to do the same exact thing and listen to those tracks is no better than somebody who bought a bootleg.
You're not wrong.
That's at least my... That's my logical stance on it from what I think about it. I don't think they're any different because no money is being monetized on any stretch of the imagination from both parties, and there's no footing to stand on. I would gladly pay out the ass if any of these were re-released immediately, but since they're not, sayonara, my man.
Sayonara, Sammy.
They released a Super Mario 64 pressing. That's a new one. Brand new, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bootleg. And guess what? It looks fucking awesome.
I'm sure it is.
And I can't get it because it's hundreds of dollars now, and I'll never get it.
Yep.
But that's... I hope Nintendo releases the bangers. I hope they open the vault and they just say, you want it? Come and get it.
We've been making these for years and yeah. Selling them to no one.
I know. But I apologize for ranting. I just feel very strongly about these kinds of things because I love supporting anybody. But if there are no methods to support anybody, I can't be... morally held accountable for half of this crap. I'm just gonna do what I want to do, and I think I speak for a lot of other people who do the same things.
I think so. I'd say so.
Thank you for listening to me, Rich, as always. You always listen to me.
No problem. This is where we come to air our grievances.
But do you agree? Do you at least what is your stance on it though? Do you actually agree with it, or do you think that it's fine either way?
No. Like I told you, I think it's perfectly acceptable. When there's no other option, if there's no real way to get a hold of the music, then there, in my opinion, I know you still are, like you said, taking money out of composers' pockets in a sense, but there's no real channel to go through. So that's my stance.
And there have been it's mentioned in this article too. This is the last thing. There was even. One of the composers for Tetris at the time, it was one of the Tetris games, he was reached out by an independent labeler who said, hey, I want to collab and make a rip of your Tetris game, and I want to know if you will, you know, sign off on that and give your blessing to do that. And the guy didn't respond to him. He didn't respond to his messages. He even admitted this later on. He found them in his inbox that were unread because he probably just ignored it, because I would imagine people do that. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They do that all the time.
That's what email forgiveness
went on and did
is.
It anyway. He just did it anyways without his permission. He pressed it, and he donated the majority, if not all, the proceeds to the guy directly.
Cool.
And he sold it. Yes. And the guy's like, listen, you know, he didn't ask me, but he did give me a substantial amount.
Also, he did technically ask.
He did. But he didn't pay attention to it. So I'm not saying, oh, yeah, just because the guy doesn't pay attention, you earn yourself the right to do it if they don't answer. But, you know, people are at least trying. At least not everybody.
He tried to go about it in as right of a way as you could.
Yeah, I feel like there's just a picture that is painted about these people who bootleg, which, again, Matt in this article actually takes... I give him props because he did not paint them in a negative light, which would have been something very easy to do. He's just painting them as aficionados because that's all people are at the end of the day. Nobody has any... ill intent in doing this. They're not trying to start up a side hustle gig.
It's no, just, no, of course
we
not.
We like it, and I would like to see more of it. Kentucky Route Zero, by the way, that released on IM8Bit. It sold out immediately. I was so salty because I missed the announcement.
Not surprising.
I was so into it, couldn't do it. But that's it.
That'll wrap it up for us. I think we had two.
Oh, damn it. I talked too much about it.
No, you didn't. We had two.
Rich, I did it again.
You didn't, Derek.
I just want to say this, too, because it's plaguing my mind. It's such guilt. No, I'm not saying video game trailers are like a student film project. I know people spend hours and days doing it and months.
Like a really good student film project.
Yeah, and it gets me kind of hyped.
But yeah. With that note, I'll move us into housekeeping. First off, thanks to Heather Ramos for our glorious logos. Thanks to Ed Biquette for our intro. You can ask us questions at geckogamespodcast@gmail.com, and we'll answer them for you unless they're hateful or they make me sad. You can find us on Twitter. Find Eric at beautiful_Eric, and find me at TheRichmeister0. And until next time,
I hope we get popular enough to have an echo chamber.
Oh, God, a really good one? That'd be fun.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Even your message of saying, you know, like, we're not going to listen to this. If somebody says, like, you suck, I'm like, you know what? Whatever, man. I'm going to my echo chamber.
Whatever. I'm deleting this and going back to my Twitter echo chamber.
I wish. Well, thank you, Rich, so much, as always, for listening.
Thanks for hanging out, and we'll catch you all next time.
Bye, everybody.